you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome to the show, everyone. It is April 9th, a Thursday, 2009. Again, welcome. It's a great day to be here on the radio with you fine folks tuning in, listening to Two-Way Radio. By the way, I happened to have my webmaster over to the house last night. We are going over several things on getting 2-8radio.com actually up and moving. It's created. There's just nothing on it. So next week, it'll be up. Have some descriptions, a little bit of a bio on me, some photographs of some things going on, as well as all the archives of the show that we're putting up onto the website. You'll be able to go there and check it out, as well as links for live feeds, podcasting, yada, yada. So it takes a little bit of time to get all that going, and keeping in mind that my webmaster, I choose the people I work with quite closely. He's actually also a firearms instructor part-time. So he's going to be teaching a course. In fact, his wife is going to be taking the course, a defensive, kind of an upgraded second-level defensive-natured handgun course. So it's a good deal. I'm willing to wait a couple days so they can get that out of the way. All right. Of course, we want you to be able to spread the good word about Republic Broadcasting. Remember, you can always log into our website, republicbroadcasting.org, if you want to grab those business cards, 100 of them for $8. Include shipping. You get a free bumper sticker with it. To order that, call 96 Central Time weekdays at 800-724-2719. I'd also like to announce those of you who listen to the Dave Champion radio show, he is coming up very, very close on his deadline to register for that class. If you have an interest, now that is actually the four-day defensive handgun class as written and performed by Frontsight Firearms Training Institute. Dave Champion is simply the host of that. So it is not Dave Champion teaching the course. He'll be there. I expect to be there. If you are interested in that, you can turn into Dave's show to hear a little bit more. That's 3 o'clock Central Time right here on RBN. You can also call his assistant, Margo, at area code 775-751-0811. Again, that's 775-751-0811. If I remember those course dates correctly, it's going to be 4 days. That'll be May 15, 16, 17, 18. If you want to stick around for the 19th to get CCW for Nevada, Utah, Florida, those are all available. You can sign up for that course in addition to the course that Dave is sponsoring. Anyhow, the deadline is coming up very quickly on that. We're going to spend a little bit of time today, and I'm just going to introduce it during this segment. We're going to spend a little bit of time today talking about the differences in societies that have enacted very strict gun control and their crime rates versus the ones that actually promote the private citizenry to have guns and their crime rate. It's interesting because as you hear this, you can probably guess where this is going. You don't need to read tea leaves or look into a crystal ball. You're going to have a pretty good idea where this is going. However, we're going to really kind of spell this out a bit and make the folks who are anti-gunners and think that we should have a lot more gun control realize that that causes much more crime and creates a lot more victims and deaths when the private citizenry is not allowed to have guns. So we're going to go through a tale of two cities. One is in Tennessee, the other is Illinois. I'm sure you'll enjoy this when we return from the break.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, folks, we're back. So, a tale of two cities, all right? Here's a tale of two cities, one that banned handguns and one that required guns. Guess which town enjoyed a plunge in crime, guys? Okay, in June 1981, Morton Grove, Illinois, it's a northern suburb of Chicago, it passed an ordinance banning handguns. In reaction, Kennesaw, Georgia, most of us pro-gun folks know all about Kennesaw, Georgia, a northern suburb of Atlanta, passed an ordinance requiring heads of household to maintain a firearm and ammunition to provide for the civil defense and protect the general welfare of the city and its inhabitants. Okay, the Morton Grove police chief said this, "Some people seem to think our residents are not armed." The chief pointed out that they did not prohibit ownership of shotguns or rifles and that gun collectors were exempt. "Many citizens preferred shotguns to handguns for home defense," is what he said. And he did not actually define a gun collector. Morton Grove residents could store their handguns outside the village limits, the town limits, or at a licensed gun club, but they could not have handguns in their homes or on their possession. Moreover, Endocrine, he recalled, out of a population of 25,000 people in Morton Grove, Illinois, that a few people, maybe 10, actually surrendered handguns to the police in the month after the law went into effect. Now, I haven't actually read the law. However, if they actually required people to turn their guns in, well, that's a violation. You can't just require somebody to turn in their personal property. That violates, I don't know how many constitutional effects. However, people turned them in. Maybe they just were supposed to sell them or get them the hell out of town. I don't know. Can you store a gun in your P.O. box, I wonder? Not your P.O. box, but your safety deposit box at the bank. That'd be kind of odd to actually walk in with a cache of weapons to put into your savings box at the bank. Wouldn't that be kind of funny? Something tells me that the folks at the bank would probably bear kittens. All right, similarly, Kennesaw's law provided so many loopholes that, in effect, no one was compelled to obey it. Certainly, convicted felons, of course, were excluded. I'm sure that Rita in Texas is not going to like hearing that. Also exempted are those who, quote, who suffer a physical disability, which is undefined, which would prohibit them from using such a firearm, and those who continuously oppose firearms as a result of religious doctrine or belief, also undefined. Inhabitants of that town may also claim exemptions for moral or financial reasons. And so it was just a bunch of loopholes. However, it essentially provided everybody in town who owned a home, who lived there, in the house, should have a working firearm with ammunition and know how to use it. According to a National Rifle Association document, the law was not expected to increase gun ownership. It was expected that publicity surrounding the ordinance would warn criminals that residents were capable of protecting themselves and their community and would do so with the blessing of the town government. The result? Not much of anything in Morton Grove. Here's a quote. "We were fortunate to have a low rate of violent crime before the ordinance was passed, and we were fortunate that the rate is still low." That was by the police chief there. But Kennesaw's crime rate in Kennesaw, Georgia, after they said you have to own a gun, the crime rate plummeted. In fact, the number of some crimes declined amid soaring population growth. For example, in figures the city provided to the FBI Uniform Crime Report, Kennesaw had 54 burglaries in 1981, the year before the gun ordinance, with a population of 5,200 and change. In 1999, 18 years later, it had gone from 5,200 people to 19,000 people. And the burglaries went from 54 down to 36, with nearly four times the people. Now, it should have been not 36 burglaries. It should have been more like a little over 200 if the percentages worked out. The rate of violent crime is approximately four times lower than the state and national rates in Kennesaw, according to Kennesaw's crime statistics report. Violent crime is almost non-existent in residential neighborhoods. Now, this was told by Graydon, who is the police chief in Kennesaw. The detective, who's been with the police department since 1986, said the isolated exceptions take place in motels or in commercial areas. But in residential areas, where the law says you have to have a gun, crime rates are relatively non-existent. Imagine that. Now, let's see here. Graydon also has lived in the area since 1979 and has heard no opposition to the gun law from anybody there. This remains the case even though most Kennesaw newcomers are from northern states. And the reason that's important is northern states are generally more anti-gun. They're not, or I should say they're not quite as pro-gun. They're either more anti-gun or they just don't have that much of an opinion on it. I would love someone from Kennesaw, Georgia, to call up today. If there's anybody in Kennesaw listening and you can talk about this on the radio, speak intelligently about what's going on here, call us, 800-313-9443. Asked whether the ordinance has attracted new people to Kennesaw, Graydon said, not specifically the law itself, but quite a few people cite the low crime rate, which a lot of people do attribute, at least in part, to the gun law. The detective said Kennesaw used state criteria for carrying a concealed handgun and not that difficult to get the license, he said. Unlike some other jurisdictions, Georgia does not require permit holders to submit the serial number of their handguns to the police. We don't register firearms down here, Graydon said. Now, the Brady campaign refused to comment. Imagine that. Hey, guys, check it out. It looks like in this town where they required everybody to have guns, population exploded as the crime rate plummeted. And they advertised that this law is on the books. What do you have to say about that? No comment. That's out of Brady campaign. Now, why is it a no comment? Well, because these facts and figures work against them. No comment. I want to sit out this part of the game, Coach, because I don't want to pitch to this guy because he's got the best hitting record in the league. So I don't want to have somebody else pitch to him so I don't have to be involved. If he gets on base or smacks a home run, I don't want it to be a statistic against me. So I'm going to take my ball and I'm going to sit down until I'm ready to play. That's essentially what Brady campaign said. Now, again, I'm going to play this file for you, which is, it has criminals, felons, who are talking about guns. And they're talking about, they don't really care what the laws are against you and I having to go through loopholes to get guns, what they see about it.
The Centers for Disease Control recently completed a review of studies of various types of gun control, waiting periods, registration and licensing, and bans on certain firearms. It could not document that these rules have reduced violent crime. How can this be? Signing the Brady Bill into law didn't help?
Don't tell me this bill will not make a difference. That is not true.
Sorry, the government can't say it has made a difference. One reason is that the bad guys tend to ignore gun laws.
When I had a gun, I didn't care what laws they had. I'm not worrying about the government saying that I can't carry a gun. I'm going to carry a gun anyway.
These maximum security felons in New Jersey scoff at measures like the Brady Law.
I'm not going in the store to buy no gun, so I could care less if they had a background check or not.
I bought it from the street, from a source. There's guns everywhere. If you got money, you can get a gun.
A study funded by the Department of Justice confirmed what these prisoners said. Most criminals buy their guns illegally and easily. And get this, the study said the felons say the thing they fear most is not the police, not time in prison, but you.
Now, put yourself in the shoes of a bad guy. Just let's see if we can get our mind wrapped around this. Okay, you're a criminal. And one of the things that you do is you prey on innocent people. Now, be it a property crime or a physical crime, maybe you're a robber, so you're actually going to go up to somebody and take their money from them personally. In order to do that, you're probably going to have a gun. You might be waiting in an ATM. One of the techniques that you're going to use, as criminals do, is overwhelming surprise and force. and to commit this crime and get out of there before they're really able to get their wits about them. Because most people don't experience this on a regular basis. These criminals, on the other hand, do this for a living. So it could be a couple times a week to a few times every single day or night. They have experience in this sort of kind of a mental terror and getting a hold of you mentally, committing this crime, taking whatever they want from you and getting out before you're able to gather your wits about you. So if that's the deal, they're prepared. They've done this many, many, many times. It's like if you wanted to go paint a car. You know, you mask the thing off, you paint it. If you've never painted a car before, it's not going to be nearly as good as somebody who's painted it a whole bunch of times. Or if you're just getting your car painted, you've never had a car painted before, you don't know what little imperfections to look for, then you're not very experienced at having a car painted. Okay, that would be what I'm doing is the car painter knows what he's doing, he does it a bunch. The criminal knows what he's doing, he's done it a bunch. If you haven't had your car painted a bunch, then you don't really know what to look for, if it's been good, bad, or whatnot, for the little things. However, if you've had cars painted a whole bunch, you know what to look for if you were a victim a bunch of times, or if you're prepared. So keep in mind, these guys are ready to go after you, so you've got to be prepared. If they have a good idea that you or a lot of people around are armed, they're going elsewhere. Guys, you don't want to have somebody picking strawberries that picks lousy strawberries. You want to pick good strawberries. You want to be a lousy strawberry. You know what I'm saying? More when we return.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back. You know, yesterday I put the audience to the test. I came up with this. When we have politicians, either elected, appointed, or, you know, otherwise hired into the jobs that misrepresent facts, what could we as citizens charge them with? Well, I have some pretty good answers. As a matter of fact, this was sent to me by Shane Edge. Thank you, Shane, for this. It says, Black's Law Dictionary. Fraud, a known misrepresentation of the truth or concealment of a material fact to induce another to act to his or her deterrent. How about that? So, just simply fraud. He continues, as far as I understand, any contract created under fraud is null and void, with any damages being held by the person constituting the fraud. In this case, the contract would be the bill or statutes that were created with the fraud inducing fear to support the, quote, acting to his or her determinant. The constituents demanding the bill be passed, for example, like gun control. So, how many, he also continues, how many murders and deaths were performed because the people followed a law based on the fraud? Those people unable to defend themselves are the victims, right? Because of this fraud on gun control. However, this is only suspicion, supposition, unable to be proven fully. Though we are able to be proven is how what we're able to be proven is how many people have served time or were required to pay a fine in violation of these laws. Each of these people should be able to sue any politician that uses fraud to pass the law that caused the damages. Thank you, Shane, very much. So fraud. Now, even if it's not able to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt in court, you need less than that to arrest somebody. What you need is probable cause. Let me give you the legal definition of probable cause, and this comes from memory. Probable cause exists when the facts and circumstances known to the officer or civilian would warrant a prudent man in believing that a crime had been committed and that the accused had committed it. In order to actually arrest, it has to be a criminal statute, not a civil statute. So, such as it's... you have to have committed a crime that's on the criminal relation of the books, not the civil relation of the books. Like if you build a 1 in 10 pitch roof on your house and the local codes say that it's got to be 1 in 11 and it's off, you can't get arrested for that. You can be fined for that. You can be told that you need to fix it. And then if you start violating that, then it could turn into a crime. But fraud's actually a crime. So this would be nice to actually do this, because regardless of where these people are standing, they're perpetrating this across the entire United States, because they're pushing for anti-gun laws across the United States. Listen to this. Report urges President Obama to use existing law to cut off flow of military-style guns to Mexico. Now, it's interesting. This is from the Violence Policy Center. This is their little article I'm going to read to you, so you have to understand that it's skewed in that direction. The thing is, it's already illegal to do that. So the president doesn't need to use any existing law. It's already illegal to take guns into Mexico. So here we go. Study of gun trafficking problems concludes that President Obama and Attorney General Holder could use a 1968 law to immediately stop import into the U.S. of AK-47s and other assault weapons being smuggled into Mexico. The Violence Policy Center today released, this is a couple weeks ago actually, released the Iron River Gun Violence and Illegal Firearms Tracking on the U.S.-Mexico Border, a comprehensive study on how the U.S. civilian firearms market contributes to the ongoing drug-related violence in Mexico. This is their report that the Violence Policy put together. Now, if you think that this is straight up, no, it's skewed. So this would essentially be their own version of fraud. They claim that the Obama administration can take immediate action under the federal 1968 Gun Control Act to cut off imports into the U.S. of military-style semi-automatic assault weapons and, quote, cop-killer handguns capable of piercing body armor. Such weapons are imported into the U.S. and then illegally trafficked into Mexico, which is all BS. By the way, guys, it's not a gun that penetrates body armor. A gun fires a round. The tip of that round is a bullet. It's the bullet which has a design to do different things, be it to pierce body armor or have a trailing tracer behind it or to penetrate steel. So it's not a gun that can pierce body armor. It's a bullet that's designed. And I challenge anybody to find a handgun round that'll actually pierce body armor. It just doesn't happen. This is how ridiculously, ignorantly stupid these people are. It's funny when they come out with this sort of things. All it does is it just shines this massive, stupid light on the idiots underneath it at the Violence Policy Center. Handguns that pierce body armor. What are you talking about? Obviously, you don't know what you're talking about, because it wouldn't come out other than completely stupid. It drives me nuts. I have a hard time thinking and coming up with rational thought when I'm dealing with people that are so stupid under this. We're going to continue a little bit about this ridiculous excuse of a report when we return. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Karnes. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, continuing on with this report from the Violence Policy Center. They call it Iron River because, you know, guns allegedly made from iron, and this river of guns headed down into Mexico, right, flowing south. So very creative name there, goofballs. Let's get back to this. This is what the Violence Policy Center is saying. With the stroke of a pen, President Obama could immediately stop tens of thousands of foreign-made assault rifles from being dumped onto the U.S. market. These cheap military-style guns, mostly AK-47 variants, are not only being smuggled from the U.S. to Mexico, but are also killing police officers in the United States from Oakland to Miami, stated Violence Policy Center senior policy analyst and study author Tom Diaz. Now, I challenge you to find for me any statistic in the last few years where a cop was killed with an AK-47 in the United States. Now, every gun becomes an AK-47 in the anti-gun news. If you can't say it's a handgun, it becomes an AK-47 by default, even though whether it is or not. I mean, it could be a handgun, and they call it a handgun, right? If it's a long gun, if it was a Mossberg 500, they're going to call it an AK-47. If it was a Mini 14, they're going to call it an AK-47. If it was an SKS, they're going to call it an AK-47, which is what happened in Oakland, unfortunately. Those four brave police officers, the two that did the car stop on the jackass that shot them with the handgun, and then the two SWAT sergeants that got taken out by the same guy, he used an SKS, not an AK-47. I mean, absolutely ambushed is what happened with the two traffic cops. And relatively somewhat outsmarted. I shouldn't say outsmarted, guys. That's really a bad term. Just prepared was the guy when he took out the two SWAT officers. Horrible. I mean, this guy he's now dead. Thank you very much, cops, for shooting this guy and making him dead. He just killed four cops. I used to be a cop, and I don't like the idea of any cops getting killed. Continuing. So, Violence Policy Center senior policy analyst Tom Diaz says, with the stroke of a pen, Obama can eliminate the import of all semi-automatic long guns, firearms, rifles, into this country, right? Part one of the Iron River Report provides an overview of the conflict in Mexico and its links with the United States, including the war on drugs, the U.S. civilian firearms market, and the transnational street gangs. Part two describes in detail the role of the U.S. civilian gun market in helping fuel the war in Mexico, the civilian gun market helping fuel the war, right? Focusing on the deliberate introduction of semi-automatic military-style firearms that today defines the U.S. civilian marketplace and the weak regulation of guns in America that facilitate illegal trafficking. Hear ye. Yes, semi-automatic military-style firearms are the staple, the mainstay, the hub of the wheel in the civilian firearms market today in the United States. And thank God for it. Thank God for it. Are people going out and spending a lot of money on like a bolt-action deer rifle or an over-and-under goose gun or a revolver to plink at steel silhouettes at 100 yards away? The answer is no. No, they're buying defensive handguns, they're buying defensive shotguns, and they're buying defensive rifles. Why? So we can defend ourselves. So thank God that the market is like that. Thank you for pointing that out, Tom Diaz. Part three of this Iron River Report offers concrete steps to control the illegal firearms traffic, including the non-legislative measures such as enforcing the import ban. Enforcing the import ban, as though the ban exists, but it's not being enforced. You know, I got just a little tune for you, Tom Diaz. Just a little thing. So pack it up and go home. Your report is full of such crap. It's ridiculous. And the thing is, you know, a handgun or a handgun round that's going to pierce body armor. I got to tell you, you're going to be hard-pressed to ever find something like that. They simply don't have enough pressure, regardless of the substance that the bullet is made of. They don't have enough velocity. They don't have enough foot-pounds of energy to do that. So you're just spewing rhetoric out of your filth hole that does not add up. It's completely ignorant. It'd be like if I wanted to talk about the technique of a ballet dancer. You know, I've never seen a ballet dancer with my own two eyes. It's only been, you know, maybe a highlight reel on the news or something, right? So it would be stupid for me to ever talk about critiquing a ballet dancer. Absolutely ignorant. And I know that it would be stupid. I've never danced ballet. I've never studied ballet. Now, something tells me, Tom Diaz, you've probably never done training with a firearm. You've probably never been the victim of a violent crime, nor anybody in your immediate family has been a victim of a violent crime, I would imagine. If I'm wrong, call me, Tom Diaz. Call me, 800-313-9443. I want to hear from you. Or email me, bill@2aradio.com. I want to hear from you. Have you ever trained with a gun? I put this out once before. I try to relate as much gun stuff as I can to cars, because everybody drives or they've been in a car. They understand cars for the most part. So here's the thing. Somebody comes up and says, I absolutely cannot stand a BMW. I hate BMWs. Really? Have you ever driven a BMW? No, I won't, because I hate them. All right, I'll tell you what. Here's the keys to a brand new 745i. I want it. It's full of gas. Take it for a day. Here's a gas card. Go drive it around. See what you like. Take it on the open road. Drive it through the city. Play with the stereo, air conditioner, whatever. You know, have a run at it. If you don't know how to drive, I'll put a professional driving instructor in there with you to teach you how to drive. Then you can enjoy it. All right, great. Bring it back in a couple of days. They bring it back in a couple of days. Now, I want you to talk with me intelligently. Now that you have all the information on a BMW, I want you to tell me what you think of it. Now you have an informed opinion. Tom Diaz in the Violence Policy Center has an uninformed opinion. Therefore, it doesn't matter. It's stupid. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't. It would be like someone who creates steel at a steel mill trying to critique the people who make a synthetic fertilizer to grow houseplants. What does somebody in the steel mill know unless they've actually dealt with the synthetic fertilizers? What do they know about it? Well, it's an ignorant, uninformed opinion. I'm not trying to say that steel workers are. And please don't go there with me. Stick with me. Don't concentrate on the steak, not the peas. It would be a completely uninformed opinion. Now, this guy, maybe this steel worker, sees that his plants grow better than the plants of the guy next door. Doesn't mean he knows squat about fertilizer. So all I know is that Tom Diaz is providing us natural fertilizer verbally because he's full of it. Thank you, Tom, for the stupid report. I hope you spent a lot of time doing it, and I hope that whatever source of funds the Violence Policy Center gets, they're paying you a lot to waste your time and make them look stupid because you did a good job. I'm going to continue on with just kind of a subset of a different report. It is likely that little, if any, of the arsenal originated in the United States of assault rifles, grenades, grenade launchers, etc., that are not available to the American gun shops for purchase, made it into Mexico, and were purchased by the general public. The Mexican drug cartels, with all of their money and sophistication, would be disinclined to risk smuggling small arms from the U.S., especially when they can easily purchase far more potent weaponry on the black market in Mexico or from sundry countries around the world, such as Venezuela, Guatemala, Iran, or these Hezbollah-type terror groups, which are really big into wishing to destabilize North America. You think they'd be interested in funding, sending guns to Mexico? You bet your butt. For that matter, the Mexican drug cartel can easily procure their weapons from less than savory elements within the Mexican establishment, be it the military or other forms of government or police. Weapons that, in all likelihood, did originally come from the U.S., but through legal channels approved by the State Department. Moreover, the drug cartels can afford to transport their purchased weaponry into Mexico from overseas using their own fleet of aircraft, ships, and submarines that they own, which can land unimpeded on the cartel's own remote airfields or at their docks. The notion that all of this military-type weaponry is somehow finding its way into Mexico via the southern United States route is simply not logical. Hillary Clinton surely comprehends this, and her statements need to be understood in context. She is a key player in a presidential administration that is passionately opposed to gun rights. The president himself is quietly launching an assault on the Second Amendment. This is the same president who formerly served on the board of the Anti-Gun Joyce Foundation, who supported a ban on the manufacture, sale, and possession of handguns, who proposed a 500% increase in the excise tax on firearms and ammunition to discourage the purchase of those items, who voted in support of legislation which would have banned privately owned hunting shotguns and target rifle in Illinois. This is back when he was senator. Who voted in 2004 against legislation intended to protect homeowners from prosecution in cases where they used a firearm to thwart a home invasion. Who appointed Attorney General Eric Holder, who helped craft the federal assault weapons ban of 1994, who banned the sale of numerous models of semi-automatic firearms 10 years ago. Holder, should be noted, has come out many times noting he would like to reinstitute the ban. The Obama administration has turned to the Mexican government's gun violence problem, turned that into a Blame America First crisis in order to advance gun control and their campaign as such that will be spearheaded by the likes of Eric Holder and Hillary Clinton. The gun control lobby fully understands this and consequently has lauded Obama's request to prevent civilians from obtaining so-called assault weapons, which, as noted before, are often nothing more than semi-automatic shotguns. American citizens at large also understand this in just totally unbelievable amount of rhetoric as evidence that the frantic pace at which the Obama administration have been going after the folks who are at their own frantic pace purchasing guns and ammunition ever since Obama was elected in November. When Hillary Clinton laments that America's incapacity to limit gun access has unfairly led people to hold the Mexican government and people responsible for the violence of its drug cartels, she's merely laying the groundwork for further encroachment on any American's right to bear arms. Her modus operandi is to depict the U.S. and the cause of gun violence in Mexico and to characterize her mission as a pure-hearted quest to save innocent lives, even though Fox News came out and we reported yesterday that only 17% of the guns taken away from Mexican drug cartels could be traced to the United States, were actually traced to the United States. The vast majority of those came from legal purchases approved by the State Department. But in reality, the Clinton-Obama approach will have a number of undesirable consequences. It will hurt the United States by imposing even stricter gun control laws, thereby making it increasingly difficult for law-abiding Americans to protect themselves. Who are they going to protect themselves against? They're going to protect themselves against Obama and Hillary. Why? Because once they get the guns, they can do whatever the hell they want to. Not on my watch. Not on my watch. Not in my house. Not under my roof. Not while I'm around. You want gun control? Then move your happy ass out of the United States into one of the hundreds of countries that don't allow guns or severely restrict them. It's not far. Just move north to Canada. You can head east to England. If you like warmer climates, head southwest to Australia. Beautiful country. Just drives me nuts. A listener email, by the way, just to break things up a little bit. Here's a little listener email. Bill, I just listened to Friday's show. Great job. My name is Michael Machlin from New York City. I've been listening to your good friend Dave Champion on his show ever since the American radio years. I must admit that the first time I heard you host in his place, I was a little skeptical because I suppose I was used to hearing his methodology and approaching subjects. However, now when I see the description, Bill sits in for Dave, I get just as equally excited, and I still occasionally will sit in for Dave. I now listen to both of your shows every single day through podcasts on my phone. You and Dave keep me level-headed in the representative environment in which I live. For that, I thank you eternally. I hope to one day soon be trained in firearms under your oversight. By the way, folks, I am working on something like that. We'll talk about that in a minute. I went to your website, and all I see is that one contact page is up right now, and he offers to help out. I've got it under control. Thank you. Thanks again for your well-informed Thoughts and everything you do, Mike. P.S. attaches a picture of me and my sister vacationing in New Orleans, to put a face with the name, which is great because I am one-quarter Cajun. My grandmother on my mother's side was full-blooded Cajun, a.k.a. known as Kunas in the group down there. I went to college in New Orleans for a while, down at Loyola New Orleans. Great place. Mike, thanks a bunch, by the way. And I got to tell you, Mike's looking at his picture. He's a younger guy. I would guess 30, maybe-ish, plus or minus a couple of years. And he's got a slick back, kind of a loose dreadlock look, jeans and a T-shirt. The kind of guy, if you saw him in New York, you would just think by appearance, he's probably very liberal, NYU sort of a thing. Not at all. Great picture. By the way, good-looking sister you got there, Mike. With all that being said, we're going to come back after this break, and I'm going to elaborate just a little bit. I'll give you a little teaser before we head into the break here about if you want to learn to do any gun-related training with me, Bill Carnes. I'm working on a couple of things. I am a qualified five-weapons range master and instructor trainer. That's handgun, shotgun, rifle, submachine gun, and precision rifle. When I was with Front Sight, I was qualified to run every firearms course on the entire schedule. So you can always look at their website and see all the stuff that they offer, and that's what I was qualified to run. I have not been affiliated with Front Sight in a teaching capacity for 6 months or better. However, I'm working on a couple of things to be able to bring some good defensive training from me to you. A little bit more when we return from the break. Stick with us.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
So professionally, a couple of things I've done. I have a business degree. I worked in family business for a long time, owned a couple of my own businesses and whatnot. I got out of business to get into firearms training, something that I loved, and I turned that into kind of my own little business with doing some contracting. I have written countless curricula for different classes, be it in the private sector or for the Department of Defense or for law enforcement groups. My main concentration when it comes to firearms training is all defensive related. I've done some sports shooting. I even own an over and under gun, over and under 12 gauge, just in case I feel like going out and shooting clay pigeons or going to hunt birds. So I own a gun, a shotgun for bird hunting, and I even own a couple of hunting rifles. Generally, more of the stuff I own is defensive-natured stuff. I own one revolver, which is it's pretty cool. It's a Smith & Wesson Model 610. It's a 10-millimeter revolver. Great gun, and I use that as a backup in case I go hunting. I need to have a handgun on me rather than a 1911 or a Glock. With that being said, with all the defensive stuff I used, I've been talking, we're in the very infancy of these discussions with a couple different guys that I have worked with for years that I helped bring up, and they brought a lot to the table. We work together when it comes to instructing and range mastering and running courses in defensive-natured stuff. The idea has come across to once a month travel to a different area of the country. You'd probably have six different areas: northwest, southwest, northeast, southeast, north central, south central. And in these regions of the country, go once a month to one of them and hit every region twice a year and provide firearms training to those of you who are out there. We'd have to find a range, get an agreement going on, figure out, where the course should be, get everybody lined up with what we're going to do, be it handgun, shotgun, rifle, whatever it might be, and actually do a monthly kind of a traveling road show of a 2 or 3 day course somewhere in a region of the United States at a nice range, one that's actually got some real-life facility to it, one that's maybe got some barricades, maybe a shooting house or something like that. Some facility that we can go to. So I'll need a little bit of your help to know a little bit about if we've got some really nice facilities in different areas around the country so that I don't have to look at the thousands that are out there. So if you happen to live, say, in the Northeast and you know of a good shooting facility in an area that's a relatively gun-friendly area to both get in and get out of, that's where we want to be. Someplace that's easy for everybody to get into and out of. Imagine if there's a great range in New York City. I mean, hey, that'd be great if they had good gun laws. But the thing is, they don't. So New York City's out. The region, or if you have to fly into New York City, it's out sort of thing. So that's what we're looking at doing, to be able to provide some of the highest-end defensive firearms training available anywhere. And I mean anywhere, and bring it to you as a kind of a mobile training team. If you have an interest in that, I want to hear your emails, bill@2aradio.com. If you know of some good, solid ranges with some excellent facility around them, let me know. I don't want to be out in the desert with some RVs and some junk. We're talking a classy way of getting this done so that we can concentrate in a safe manner in defensive use of firearms training. That's what we're looking at doing, bringing to you from 2A Radio and Bill Cars. Thanks for spending your day with me. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.